When you need to do more with less, Upwork helps you hire fast without the overhead. Find expert freelancers in design, marketing, IT, AI, and more. Never tried Upwork? Now's the perfect time. Spend your first $1,000 and get $200 in credit for your next project. No upfront costs. No long-term commitments. Just $200 to reinvest in what matters. Go to Upwork.com/save to get started. That's UPWORK.com/SAVE. Upwork.com/save.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
The last thing they saw was someone they trusted. You're tuned in to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreeke.
I'm Tony Bruschi. Here's a question for you. What happens when the lines between justice, coercion, and incompetence become so blurred that no one knows who to trust anymore? Today, we're diving into a case where a confession letter reads more like a child's doodle. And a man's mental health hangs in the balance, and a single unspent bullet is all that holds together the state's narrative of guilt. Robin Dreeke, retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, going to join us in just a moment as we explore the strange details surrounding the supposed confession created not by the accused, but reconstructed by a journalist, leaving us wondering how much of what we think we know of the Richard Allen trial is even real. We also examine how methods of coercion, both subtle and overt, are at play in the justice system, and what happens when those in power rely on pressure rather than truth to close the case. And more disturbingly, could incompetence be driving innocent people to the brink, all in the name of justice? Robin, let's go to you.
There's two parts I want to talk about here. The confession letter, which they brought up as being, this is a big deal. Look at this confession letter. I mean, it looks like something that maybe a kindergartner wrote. Big, weird letters. It's not really consistent. It's all over the board on a piece of paper. It was a recreation that a reporter made because we can't see the actual evidence itself. But it doesn't look like the work of anyone who's competent, right? And right. Like a note, like, I hope I can say sorry to the families. It's not the work of someone who's writing a confession letter, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. We've talked about the confessions earlier on as well. The way he was treated in the court system, the way his mental health has been talked about, so we don't know whether it is or isn't, but you know, there's issues there, and the issues by the way he's been treated, and the fact that you described what that letter looks like, that's not shocking or surprising. I am not, and that, you know, Gull's allowing, you know, the judge is allowing the confessions to stand because they weren't coerced, he said. Coercion and mental anguish, you know, where's that line drawn?
Mental anguish essentially is coercion at a certain
point. It is to me.
It's exactly what that is. I mean, you're breaking someone down. And in
isolation for how long, you know, and in his filth.
And how reliable is that, especially from the spy world, Robin, of, you know, breaking someone down to get information? How often do you actually get accurate information by doing that? Or do people just eventually crack and say whatever they think you want to hear to stop you from doing what they're doing to you?
It's funny you bring that up. You're so right, though. I never, ever, ever, and that's a very definitive line. Mm-hmm. I have never used it, never done it, because it is the most sure way to have someone not tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. Because people will say anything to allow themselves to feel safe again. So when you start, you know, and a great friend of mine, Jack Schaefer, wrote the book, The Truth Detector, as well as The Like Switch, as well as my other friend, Joe Navarro, the body language expert. All these people will tell you, even using the word of elicitation, they won't even use the word of elicitation, where you're compelling someone to tell you the truth and they think it's all manipulation and everything. But we use this thought process and phraseology differently. We think, how do you inspire someone to share the truth with you before they have an opportunity to lie? Mm-hmm. And the way you do that is you allow them to feel safe that it's okay to tell you the truth. You know, there's lots of interviewing strategies to engage, you know, but you're going to do things like rationalizations, projections, minimizers. You're going to help someone feel safe that it's okay to share information, which might not be in their best interest. And you do that by not coercing, by not cajoling, by not definitely not using manipulation or subterfuge, because all those things do not allow the other human being on the other side to feel safe with sharing information with you. The worst thing you can do to inspire confession is to show someone their shame. Another great author I love, Mike Reddington, he's a certified forensic interviewer. You know, that is the worst thing you can do. And he's gotten people to confess just to minor things, you know, shoplifting, mm-hmm. you know, in stores where they have no video evidence, but he was able to inspire them to share that they, you know, did the shoplifting thing, because the last thing he did in the world was he showed them their shame. He used what we call deep, deep empathy. Mm-hmm. Which is seeing the world through someone else's context and lens. And so all those things to me were missing when getting these confessions, you know, and even I have other friends that worked at Guantanamo Bay, you know, doing interrogations of terrorists. They didn't do that.
Yeah.
It does not work. You know, I always say, you know, I worked a lot of confidential human sources in my career in the FBI. And I always said this, I said, I'd rather have seven people give me 120% of their effort willingly than 100 people give me 5% of their effort unwillingly, because mm-hmm. you can't trust any of the information. So it's always about the behaviors of trust are really simple. Open, honest communication, transparency, vulnerability. When you display those behaviors, you make the conversation about the other person. You don't show them the shame. You inspire them then to want to share the truth before they have an opportunity to lie. There's my long monologue.
No, so you're saying locking someone in a solitary room for years on end with no trial and very weak evidence against them, and then to be tormented by judges and or by prison guards with Odinist patches on for years on end, that may produce unreliable results.
So as a behaviorist, you know, it's really funny. No kidding, Tony.
Yeah,
you're exactly right. So as a behaviorist, when I hear things like that, I no longer am listening. I mean, my mind automatically tunes out to what the individual that's locked up says. Yeah. My mind automatically goes to what inspired them to want to do that to him.
Yeah.
So my mind shifts not from mm-hmm. him, but to those that inflicted that on him, because that says more about them than anything coming out of Alan's mouth in that situation, because that can't even be counted. You know, it's why, you know, I've known and I've worked with polygraphers my entire career. You know, polygraphers will tell you the same thing. Mm-hmm. The polygraph machine is a great prop. When used well as a great prop, it inspires people to tell the truth before they have an opportunity to lie. Because all the machine does is measure physiological responses to stresses and thoughts. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, when you're working in the spy world and you're working with people that have, you know, like intelligence officers on the opposite side, they fall in love with their own narrative. They can lie all day long and completely pass a polygraph because they believe it.
Yeah,
method actors are the same thing in the movie industry. Yeah. If you're a method actor, you are living that life of who you are. And I guarantee you, they could probably pass a polygraph when they're in method acting role for a role they're doing because mm-hmm. they're so into that character. It's who they are.
Yeah.
That's why polygraph is not admissible in court because, again, it just measures physiological responses. So any physiological response Alan has to the stressors he was under, what he's saying in those situations, I'm not really paying attention. I'm paying attention to who are the people doing it to him and what was their purpose for doing that.
Yeah. Confirmation bias, I would guess, in a lot of cases. It's like, we got our guy. This is the guy who did that to those kids. And if you're not a deep thinker, you're going to feel, oh, yeah, he's a horrible human being. You still can't do that to a prisoner. I mean, when you get your wits about you and you're not thinking like a 10-year-old anymore, it's like, yeah, you can't torture the prisoners. They have to go to court. But if you're still thinking like a 10-year-old, you're like, yeah, let's poke him with a stick and nobody's going to stop us because that's the atmosphere, that's the climate of that prison, which it seems like it kind of was, according to many of the reports that we've heard. Let's talk about one other issue here. That's the unspent bullet that they found at the crime scene. Apparently, it was like face down into the mud. This is literally the only physical thing that the state is saying connects Richard Allen to it. Why? Because he has a weapon that could put this bullet in it, technically. So did all the police who walked around that scene for hours and days, and there was a lot of them. And they found the bullet, by the way, after the police were on the scene walking around looking at it. They argue that the science of this, of the bullet itself, if you look at it, that it would have been cycled through this gun. Now, that science, you know, it's not the most reliable, especially for an unspent bullet as well. This thing was not fired through the weapon. It was just allegedly cycled through. This is what they're putting a lot of weight on. How much weight does something like that truly hold when that is the only thing that they say could technically connect him to the scene?
A forensic firearms expert is going to have to show how it's actually in Allen's gun. I have a Sig Sauer. Does that make me a suspect in this?
Apparently, according to Delphi, yes.
So here's my other question. So here's my advice to defense on this one. So here's a man that seemingly, if it is him, was able to and have the wherewithal to scrub the entire scene of all his DNA, but he leaves a bullet behind.
Yeah.
Spike from the pattern.
Yeah. So
it's either one or the other. He's either really, really good murderer or really, really bad murderer. And if he's really, really bad, he would have left the bullet and a lot of DNA evidence.
If you're strangling two children and slitting their throats, there's a good likelihood that you're going to have some DNA on them, you know, in some way, shape, or form. It's very rare that you would not have anything. So either did they not examine the crime scene well enough, or they did and they just don't have the pieces that add up to him. I mean, hell, they found hair in one of the girl's hands. Allegedly, it belongs to a family member who's female. That doesn't help a whole lot, although it does make you question, why do you have a handful of your family member's hair? Which I guess is a pretty valid question at a murder scene. But there's just more that continues to come in here that does not point to Richard Allen. I'm waiting.
This is more to me a case of, and it's sad because, you know, the families are still looking for justice. Allen's looking for justice, but this seems to be a case of really, really bad police work to me.
Yeah, it feels like that. And I've said it from the beginning. Is there a conspiracy going on here? I don't know that there is. I think I've said it from all along. Like I said, it's simply somebody fucked something up. Somebody to cover that up. Oh, we got to cover up that. We covered that up. We got to cover up that part too. Oh crap! I got to cover up that now. And it just layer, and then it starts looking really bad. How I think happened with Karen Reed too, where it's not necessarily a crime that they're covering up, as if they were one of them was involved or something of that nature, meaning the police force, but more so just incompetency or bad work. And then it starts looking really, really bad. And
again,
in the meantime,
it goes back to the victims' families. They're the ones still paying the price for it.
Exactly. Then they have to pay the price for it. They have to go down this road with this man who may not very likely be guilty, but they want justice. So, you know, they're going to have a preconceived a bias there of, well, maybe, you know, he should be. They want somebody to go down. I'm not speaking for them, but they were testifying, and I can tell from what we can see, you know, they're hoping they got their guy, but who knows?
I hope that at the end of this, whatever the verdict is that everyone is 100% convinced it is what it is. Because if it's not, if someone walks away, especially the victims, and say, I hope we were right, that means for the rest of your life, there's going to be doubt. Yeah. And it's not fair.
I agree. I just don't know that we're ever going to get to that in this case.
Not yet.
Hopefully we get somewhere close. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program right there. Thank you, as always, for joining us. And there it is, that confession that, in my opinion, doesn't hold up very well. A bullet that raises more questions than answers in a system that seems more tangled than ever. Look, I get it. Police work is hard. Cases are complicated and families need closure. But when incompetence starts stacking up like bricks in a wall, the result isn't just bad policing. It's a tragedy for everyone involved. And the scariest part? Once the gears of the justice system start grinding on that path, it takes a miracle to stop them, even if the wrong person is caught in those gears. Let's talk about the real issue here. Coercion, dressed up like justice, keeping someone locked in isolation, tormented by guards, and then accepting whatever confession comes out of that? That's not an investigation. That's psychological warfare.
We've known since Guantanamo, and even before then, that breaking down people. No, breaking down human beings isn't about getting to the truth. It's about getting compliance, getting what you want them to say, to come out, to prove the narrative of what you think is right. And maybe in some cases, it's a good cause. Maybe what you're fighting for and the right that you think you're going after in some cases may be very just and true. But what about when it isn't? Compliance doesn't equal guilt, even if you think you're going down the right path. If you have no intention and really not even in your lexicon of saying, maybe we're wrong, you're going to get the wrong person. The unspent bullet, I mean, come on. It's like finding a spoon at a crime scene and saying, well, he owns spoons. He must be guilty. This is a part of the country where everyone has guns and bullets. Not to mention all the officers who worked that scene who also would have had the same type of bullets with them. And when you have many, 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 many officers working a crime scene, it's a possibility that maybe a bullet could fall out. Maybe. We've got to do better than that. Either this guy is a criminal mastermind that left zero DNA on a crime scene where the girls are stripped and their throats slashed. Don't even get me started on some of the police work, quote unquote, that was done in this, again, air quotes type style investigation, where one mistake essentially gets covered up with another until the whole thing looks like a conspiracy. So what are we left with? We're left with a family that deserves real justice. A man who may be innocent in a case that feels more like a poorly written crime novel than reality. The only thing worse than convicting the wrong man is leaving the victims here that are still alive, who have been tormented by this every day of their lives, wondering who took their young daughters. If we can't get the facts straight, we can't get our policing work straight, not doing them any justice, you're leaving them with more doubt for the rest of their lives. So let's hope we can get this one right. And if Richard Allen is not the man that did this, that means there's somebody still out there. Likely, unless they're dead. Or they're behind bars already. Something the Delphi Police Department is going to have to take a very close look at while eating some crow. At least that's the way I see it. I'm Tony Bruschi. If you want to stay up to date on this case and others we cover, be sure to press subscribe. Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're neck deep in a dark, twisted tale. And just as the tension peaks, bam, a commercial about some miracle diet pill breaks the spell. It's like finding a fly in your soup after the first bite. But here's the fix. True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. You get to enjoy your crime stories without the junk, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that go beyond the surface, and early access to all the gruesome details. It's like swapping out a can of cheap beer for a glass of fine whiskey. So search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and keep the darkness flowing uninterrupted.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.